Let's collect some more data.
Mike, just stick with the special ed stuff. Okay? Just special ed stuff. Thank you.
But I do, I am concerned, and I appreciate your acknowledgement, because I feel like we have some really excellent professional support professional staff, like from OTs to PTs, speech and language pathologists, school psychologists, social workers, and we are all very disenfranchised right now, and it's very difficult to work in, and I would assume, you know, I've worked really well with my colleagues, that they would say, Amy, yes, you do a good job at what you do. Do I know 100% of the time what to do? No, but I try to make, judgments. It is very subjective, but you're constantly second-guessing yourself, from whether it's a student qualifies for special education services to whether you call the Kent Center. It's just a very difficult time right now for us as support professionals.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, that, literally and figuratively, that's what you call stepping up. That was good. Thank you. All right. It's like a runaway train. Hi, I'm Jason Hudden. I am a lifelong resident of Warwick. I am a English teacher at Pilgrim High School. I am the father of a wonderful young man who has an IEP. This is Evan Hudden, and he has given me permission to talk about a few things tonight. Right. I also have a special education cert pending at RIDE, just waiting for the check to clear. So I'm in a unique position to talk about this without fear of repercussions, because my direct boss is not my direct evaluator, as is with many of the special educators in our building. So silence seems to be the golden thing. There is definitely, as Dr. Witsous would say, a vug under the rug. But to be direct, we'll talk about Evan first. Evan currently has his IEP that's being violated by the school system. He has, if you look on the service placement part of his IEP, he has small group instruction in mathematics, and checked off is to be done by a special educator. However, there is no special educator in that classroom. So she's one of three positions where the special educator, in his case, has retired. We also have two more positions in the school where the special educators are out with long-term illnesses, but they have been replaced with a sub for that has a certification in one and physical education, and two in history. And they are in charge of accommodating his math programs. And let me tell you, until our first IEP meeting, his math program and his accommodations were not being met. So we had found this out in the second week of September. We notified the school system this was unacceptable. It's a clear violation of the IEP by law. Not even a question of that. We gave them until October 1st, citing that there were some issues, the consolidation would create some concerns, but we gave them the extra 2 weeks to finish up and find somebody. This has not happened, all right? So, and part of that is there's a hostile work environment that has been created. I won't get too far into that, but it's caused special educators not to want to invest a career in Warwick from an outside system. So right now we're not too attractive for young special educators to come in and want a career in Warwick because of the, one person literally told me, this is a Golden Apple Award winner that works in a charter school in Providence, who lives in Warwick, has family in Warwick, would end up making $8,000 a year more to come to Warwick. And her response was, quote, hell no, I do not want to be involved in the litigation that may happen. That's telling enough, all right? So they never found the special educator. They told us they were close on finding one. And I said, really? They said, yes, it has to be approved by the school committee before that they can be in the classroom. I said, that is not true. You can hire a sub and put them in the classroom. All right, and they did hire special educators. None of them have placed in Pilgrim, which leads me to believe this is a larger issue. And there are many larger issues out there. All right, for instance, one of the reasons we've talked about class size, Mr. Hodge came up and he gave you those numbers. So I don't have to really repeat those numbers for you. So he has over 60% of his classroom having IEPs. The national model, also expressed by Jennifer Connelly, so this is my classwork, we've talked to Jennifer, I've talked personally to her, this is on record, the national model is 6 to 8 IEP students for 22 to 24 students. Now, Mrs. Netko has automatically done the math, and she's probably got a little chuckle in her head, and she'll talk to you about that later. All right, so this is where that one-third number comes from. This is so you can provide that small group instruction within a classroom. It's a lot easier to pull 3 kids of a side, work with them with similar IEPs, and then another 3 within that classwork and gauge where they're going. And this isn't happening. We have over 60%. And they are going to lie to you. Are you guys ready for the lie? It might have happened already. They're going to come up to you and say, well, not every IEP is equal. And they're going to count on the fact that we cannot share student information, just like Dr. Thornton had expressed to you. And they don't want us talking. That's why you need to come up here. They don't want us talking about these IEPs. They want us all separated, and they don't want us to know. There probably are all 13 of those IEPs in the math class have an IEP for math. This is not small group instruction. How many people in secondary ed might be in this situation now? Or know of this situation? All right. So how many people also probably had a student that had resource last year that does not have resource this year? Excellent. So what we have here is a claim to make against the school department from RIDE. And the reason why this is they've not provided a continuum of services. So they had small group instruction last year, which probably was 6 to 8 IEP students in the classroom, and a resource pay period. Now, because of lack of personnel, they have all the special educators, almost all of them, there are some exceptions, in the classrooms, no resource period. Now the student has gone from 6 to 8 in the classroom with a resource period to 13 in a classroom with no resource period. That service and placement on usually page 11 of the IEP is not being met. And they are going to then tell you all IEPs are not equal. All right, and they are going to say, well, the national model is not really a law, it's a suggestion. So they're hiding. They're hiding behind stuff. Maybe this is why they don't want certain phone calls to be made to the Kent Center. Maybe they don't want people looking and saying, hey, not only are my students' rights being violated, like Evans currently still is, all right, but my students might be in danger to themselves and to other students in the classroom. All right, this is our responsibility as adults. And I thank you for coming here. Because right now, some people could say, well, some of you are running for re-election. No, you care. That's why you're here. These are the most delicate members. Evan doesn't vote yet. But this is why you're here. And I thank you for that. All right. If anyone else has any questions later to ask me, you can feel free to. Thank you.
Matt, for the record, Jason, I'm sorry. For the record, I don't have an opponent, so they're stuck with me for another 2 years.
Hi, my name is Michael DeSalvia. I'm a lifelong resident of Warwick. And I'd like to thank you for bringing this meeting tonight, and maybe we can get some things resolved. And to bring something up that Donna Travis brought up, take a look at who's not here. If you're in their ward, don't vote for them. They don't have your best interest in mind.
Sir?
I'm going into...
No political comments. Strictly with special ed, okay?
We have an ongoing problem at Norwood School. My daughter's class has several kids in it with learning disabilities. As I just found out from her teacher, they've lost 34 days of learning. I'm not happy. These kids are very disruptive, flipping chairs over, desk over, flooding the classroom, verbally abusive as well as physically abusive. Every time one of these students have an issue, it's the class that leaves the room. And this stops them from learning. Just this week, the class was taught in a hallway. Totally unacceptable, as far as I'm concerned. Something needs to be done here. I see four... I see four solutions to this problem. Move the children's troubled students to a class that they will not be disruptive. Change schools, send them to another district, or hire more help. These kids deserve an education too, but not at my daughter's expense. Because of the constant disruption, she is not getting what she should from her classroom. And the other children as well are not receiving the education they deserve. When my daughter leaves school for the day, I always ask, how was your day? And every day, well, it was not really a good day. So-and-so did this, and so-and-so did that, and it's always the same kids. And when I open my daughter's backpack, and I find this paper in her backpack, begging the parents to attend this meeting, because the last 3 days have been horrible. It's not right. It's time for action. When I looked into my daughter's teacher's eyes today, I saw a woman at her wit's end. And I will guarantee she went home and had a good cry. And let me remind you, this is a woman working without a contract. So in closing, we are not here asking for change. We are demanding change. Remember, and I know most of you forget unless it's election time, you work for me. You work for every taxpayer in this room.
Sir, strictly special ed.
This is part of special ed.
No comments on politics.
Don't let our kids down, and don't think, and thank you once again for the special arrangement today.
Thank you. Yes.
It's not because we're trying to be mean or jerky or anything. It's just we wouldn't want anybody to be able to come back and say, oh, this was just a politically motivated kind of meeting. And that's the only reason we're saying we don't want anybody to be able to take away from the kind of stories that you're telling about what's going on and say, oh, it was just a stunt. It was just a – that's why we want to – just want to make sure you realize, you know, we're not trying to shut anybody down. Just want to make sure – special ed, nothing else.
For those, yes. No, I did not, but that is a great suggestion. Thank you. You can just, if you have written questions or comments that you would like to present to us so we can disseminate it amongst our colleagues, you can just bring them right up here. But for those who came in after I spoke initially, I just got to remind you one more time what Mike said. Has to be special ed. This isn't about contracts. This isn't about anything else but special ed. Has nothing to do with consolidation. Has nothing to do with who's getting elected, who isn't getting elected. This is about the kids, about the special needs students, and about the situations that exist around their daily lives and the educators that are trying to educate. All special ed. Thank you.
Scott Dagle.
Good evening. You want my name? You already said it, I suppose. That's good enough for now. My name is Scott Dagle. I'm the band director at Aldridge Junior High School. Oh, I'm sorry. You know, 18 years of saying that, and it's hard to stop saying it. Vets, junior high school. I want to tell you a story about a sweet 10-year-old boy with Down syndrome. His story and the struggle of his mother that she experienced while in Warwick underscores the reality of the special ed program as we know it. Joseph, who was soon to be my stepson.
No names of students.
A little boy who's soon to be my stepson. graduated out of Lippitt, out of the program, which was a nightmare of an experience. He was placed in a behavioral room, inappropriate setting. A lapsed IEP, which soon turned into a complaint filed with the Department of Ed with sanctions that followed. And my fiance looked for a school that would be the best fit for her son's needs in Warwick. There were offers made by the special ed department. However, my fiance chose to visit some of the schools to make sure that her decision, she had some input with this decision. Cedar Hill was initially offered, but that was not good enough as it was not the best fit for her reasons. She wanted Hoxie. She wanted that because of her friend, whose son, also with Down syndrome, attends that school and has done wonderfully. However, it was filled to capacity, and there was no more room. The better fit she found was from past experience with Marissa Miller. Hi, Marissa Miller over at Warwick Neck. I can't say enough good things about Marissa. Unfortunately, beyond her control, he was placed in a room that was an inappropriate setting. It was a behavioral setting. This little boy has Down syndrome and mimics the behaviors that he witnessed. This resulted in a temporary stay at Bradley in the PD partial program. Upon returning with recommendations from Bradley and the doctors, admin had promised in an IEP one-on-one with a TA. Those promises were later broken. Time missed from school, about 70 hours, were promised tutoring. Those never came to fruition, so he lost time. Promises that were made and, again, broken. Instead of providing the services, he was placed in this inappropriate setting. It set him behind even further. This placement was unsafe. The mimicked behaviors lost educational time. We sold our house and we moved. We had enough. 5 years of school is more than enough time to know services would not be rendered. We're now at Charahoe. He can now spell his name properly after only 2 weeks of school. The behaviors are diminished. He's in a setting where he is learning. Everything that Warwick used to be is now what he's getting in Charahoe. And as our former, one of the earlier speakers had mentioned, the integrity is gone. This mother wanted to be a part of the solution and join the Special Ed Advisory Board. She vehemently opposed the elimination of waiting. Sent an email to Dr. Conley and the Advisory Board, this Special Ed Committee, listing the reasons why she did not agree with the elimination of waiting. The letter she received in return was, "That's unfortunate. We're moving ahead. If you'd like to send us your reasons behind this, we'll gladly share it with the rest of the committee." She knew it was shoveling sand against the tide and that her voice would not be heard. These are the reasons why we left. And I think more will go, and they will not be replaced. The population, folks moving into Warwick, have no reason to come here when they hear stories like this. I think this underscores the reality of the special ed program. The most at-risk, the ones we should be caring for the most, are being failed by the ones who promised to lead us and to give us what we need to do our jobs. That's it in a nutshell.
Thank you
for your time.
Good job. Karen?
Jason.
No, go ahead. All right, go ahead.
Good evening. Jason Buchanan, 7th grade science teacher at Vets Junior Middle School. I'm here to read an email that I sent, which was prompted by an email from Dr. Conley, which was sent to, I assume, the entire school district, definitely through the Vets area at least. It's her weekly updates that have started, I guess, a month and a half into school, special ed weekly updates. And recently, last week, we received our second one for this, and this is the response that I sent to her. It was, the email was from her dealing with frequently asked questions about the co-teaching model and what this entails and so on. So I share concerns and would like to add something else to that's what's already been said. What about classes where there is no special educator? Presently, I have three classes where there is no special educator. In those three classes, I have 52% with IEPs, 48% with IEPs, and 45% with IEPs. Again, in those rooms, there is no special educator. In your email, you state a co-taught model requires two teachers with equal licensure and equal levels of expertise who co-plan, co-teach, and co-assess a diverse group of students. Your email also states, the generally accepted ratio is a maximum of a third students with IEPs and two-thirds general education students, which, unless I need an IEP with math goals, seems to not fit what is presently happening in my general education classroom. Again, I have 52%, 48%, and 45% in those three classes. Where is the required teacher with equal licensure and equal levels that will co-plan, co-teach, and co-assess a diverse group of students in these classrooms? Where is the significantly reduced teacher-student ratio for all of the students in the co-taught classroom that is supposed to be, and I quote, one of the benefits of co-teaching, as stated in your email? Since there is no special educator in these classrooms, how could I possibly be expected to successfully meet the needs of all the regular education students, let alone all the students with IEPs? Why has this district implemented a change without providing any professional development? Watching a 4-minute video, which was in the first weekly update, and an 8-minute video, which is in that last week's update, will not help accomplish that goal. Nor will reading dissertations on the differences between the co-op and the co-teach models. Professional development should have been provided before this plan was put in place, not while the school year is underway. When will proper professional development be given to all educators involved and not just to English and math teachers? Now, in one of my classes, there is a special educator, so to be honest, I have one in one of my classes present. However, this is also the class with the lowest percentage of IEPs. This class only has 41% of the students with it in an IEP. And I believe that's still higher than the generally accepted, quoted again from her email, generally accepted ratio of a maximum of one-third students with an IEP and two-thirds general ed students. I'm sure that the special educator and I could be successful at meeting the needs of our students if there was the opportunity for co-planning lessons that we would co-teach and co-assess. But as stated above, there's no time for this during our common planning time. There's no time for such quality work to take place. With an average of 38% IEPs on my team, we spend much of our common planning time meeting with parents. I can speak to that. The last three meeting times, we had four different IEP meetings in the three periods that we have for meeting with parents, meeting with counselors and others to review those IEPs. Add to that the time where we'll need to meet to discuss how we're going to address the needs of the regular education students, the meetings that come up with parents, just not instead of just the IEPs, but regular meetings, and general team matters as they present themselves, and how do you expect this model to be successful? I'll repeat a question that occurred in an earlier email. What is the district's plan moving forward to structure the school day and student schedules in a way that supports this co-teaching model? And I said, thank you for your time and attention to this matter. I'm still waiting for that attention. Thank you.
Jason.
Yes.
In some of these documents that I've received, it speaks to this co-teaching thing that you were just speaking to. I probably have a dozen or more copies of emails, and I'm just going to read a couple of them, maybe a few of them,
okay,
so they're on the record. This one says, and it's directed to Dr. Connolly, it says, I co-teach with four different teachers in four different subjects in four different classes at XYZ High School. I do not have common planning time with any of these teachers. Thus, we are unable to assess and plan together. I am in common planning time with teachers with whom I have no students in common. My co-teachers and I co-teach at the end of each class while I'm packing my bag to run to the next co-taught class. True co-teaching is not happening in my situation, and I'm sure this is not happening in most of our schools. Another one, Dr. Connolly. I am in two co-taught classes with different special ed teachers. Please explain how we are to work together when we have no common planning time. Every co-teaching model requires common planning time. Warwick has failed to provide any. And these comments just go on and on. The same thing. And I said a dozen, probably more like a couple of dozen that I'm looking at right here. So your comments are spot on.
Right.
This is on the record, in writing, from teachers to Dr. Connolly.
I can speak, I can say that we have a common planning period where a co-taught teacher could meet with us, but again, on the team that I'm teaching on, which is now the SA team, which is the supportive academics team, is what was created. We have been given the large majority of the students that fall under that category. So our team has, as I said, approximately 38% as a team. And so we're dealing with 38% on my team with IEPs. So the time that we would use to meet with the co-teaching teacher, a special educator, we don't have that time because we're spending the time doing paperwork, doing meetings, checking IEPs with parents, and confirming that information. So, absolutely. Thank you for your time.
Good evening. I'm Darilyn Gorton. I'm a teacher at Betts Middle School. I teach English. I have feedback. I didn't plan my speech tonight, but I can say that I teach, my classes range from 20 to 46% IEPs. And as an English teacher, I am very fortunate. I have a co-teacher four of those five teaching periods. The other class period I don't have him is an honors level class. And it's a wonderful thing to have somebody consistently across the board to work with. So in the classes, the 20% is twice as effective because there are two of us in the classroom. So it's a wonderful thing. Unfortunately, and I quickly reviewed a bunch of IEPs before I left work today, 90% of my students all have goals in writing. And my social studies teacher is phenomenal. And the first week of school, he was doing an essay with the students. And he only has the special educator one period. So these students neither the social studies nor the science teachers have special educators in their classrooms of these four periods because they're all weighted pretty much the same, although they have the special educator in one subject, and that's usually the lowest percentile. So these kids are not getting those services across the board, and their IEP states in all classes. In addition, last week we found out another one of our students has an IEP. They were not in the computer. The third week of school, I found out a student had a 504 because we requested a parent meeting because they were already not meeting with success, and it was found. So there's a problem with our record keeping as well. That's a concern. I can't provide services for students. I can't have my special educator do that if we don't know that they're there. I have another child's IEP that states that they are supposed to have resource 3 days a week. That's not possible because the special educators, there are two on my team. One is co-teaching in math, four periods, and science, one. The other one is working with me, four periods, and social studies, one. They work full out, and that their non-teaching time is usually being utilized to contact families. So they don't even have a great deal. We are doing our best to meet the IEPs, but I know that there are severe violations there. There is no methodology to fix this. It has been suggested, and I will put it that way because it was told to me through somebody else, that if we're in violation of IEPs, we should call an IEP meeting and fix the IEP. To me, that's blatant disrespect to the students, to their families, and to their previous educators, because those IEPs were written to meet that child's success. We shouldn't have to change their IEPs to meet the school's, the way the school's set up. We should be doing what we need to meet these child's goals. We've already moved one child off of our team because we, too, are the supportive academics team and not the intensive team. And we had a girl who was going home on a daily basis and devastated every day because she had no idea what was going on because we could not give her and meet her needs. I have another student who has severe issues, was in a behavior program which no longer exists. So now when he has a meltdown, he needs to either see the school psychologist or the guidance counselor, which is halfway down the other end of the building. So if he's in serious need and there's a serious issue, the special educator I work with has to leave to take that child down. Other days, it's not as serious, and he's capable. I can make a phone call so they know that he's coming, and he goes down. But he loses all that class time just alone in travel in crisis. And if he's having a good day, things work really well. If not, my special educator has to almost be a one-on-one with him. So the other students that are in that classroom are not getting their needs met as well. So the current system is not working. I'm also, as a professional, offended by the notion of co-teaching versus cooperative teaching. I have been co-teaching for as long as I can remember with other teachers, and it's not about putting more kids with IEPs in a classroom. It's about how do the two teachers work together to support the needs of all learners in a room. So I wanted to come here tonight to speak to you because we need to address this issue. We are not meeting students' needs. We're trying to document it as much as we can so that we can fix it. And we want you to know that we are doing our very best and we're not happy with the situation either. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Dean Johnson. I'm going to talk about my son. And so I waive all whatever I have to waive. My son, Toby, from a very young age, had some educational disabilities. He wasn't able to speak until he was almost 4 years old. And just things stem from that. Now, I was lucky we got into early intervention, and let me tell you, the teachers in Warwick are wonderful. But recently, in the last couple of years, it was in a classroom in Holloman, which is a great school. We got some great teachers here from Holloman that always cared a lot about him. But starting a couple of years ago, he would, "How's your day, son?" "Oh, we didn't do much. So-and-so kid X started screaming, and we had to sit there and let him calm down." "Okay, that's, you know, all right." And a couple days later, "How was your day, son?" "Oh, so-and-so kid Y threw this at me." "Oh, what?" Then it just kept going and going. And every year, while the first couple years he was catching up slowly, you know, he got belted, bad genetic hand, you know, and that's life sometimes, I get it. But and then suddenly he started falling more and more behind. In third grade, he was reading at a second grade level. We were trying to catch him up after being so far behind in math. He was almost caught up. But in fourth grade, he was still at a second grade level. In fifth grade, he maybe made it halfway through second grade level. And we kept going, "What's going on?" They're like, "Well, we have to teach this way. We don't have any options. There's not enough." And every year, more and more kids were added to the classroom. And I don't blame the teachers. I mean, how can they teach? There's one of them and there's a multitude of kids. There's not enough time in the day to do it. So finally, I asked him, "Can you keep my son behind?" You know, it's kind of a hard thing for a parent to ask. You kind of admit, "Hey, you know, something's wrong." And I was told, "No, we're not allowed to keep your kid back. We have to promote him to sixth grade." And I'm like, no, he's literally reading barely at a third grade level, doing math at barely a fourth grade level. We would love to, we're not allowed to. And that's when I decided that, you know, for someone who loves public education, frankly, I know no political talk, I'm running for school committee. I left the Warwick schools. I put my son in a private school where he was able to stay back, where he was able to get the proper facilities. And now he's starting to thrive. And I'm just saying that I'm lucky. I have the resources. I was able to leave. What's concerning is I'm hearing more and more about the people who can't, and they're stuck. And frankly, the school committee and the school department doesn't seem like it cares. The teachers, they're hollowing at the moon. They're trying. They're fighting. Next thing I know, they're going to start. You know, I don't know what else they can do. But no one listens to them. Well, not obviously you guys are. But what are we going to do about it? And I asked a couple parents, like other parents who are in my situation, where their kids, they just feel like they're stuck. "Well, why don't you do something?" "I don't have the resources. I can't go out and hire somebody to fight for me." So I decided with a couple of my friends that I would like to pledge $10,000 for a legal fund.
Dean, just keep it strictly on special ed. No pledge, no money.
Well, I'll talk to you later about
special ed.
But I think we need to help the parents fight for what they're doing. And if we need to, why don't we bring it up to a court? You know? I'm sick of it, you know? We shouldn't have to run from our own public schools to get proper things for our kids. What are you going to do about it?
Thank you.
Caitlin Carr. Good evening, and thank you for hearing me tonight. First off, I'd like to say that it's a sorry state of affairs when we have to have a meeting like this just for our students' legal rights to be upheld within our public school system. But that being said, in the midst of dozens of other well-qualified speakers, I might seem to be representative of a group that isn't a very large stakeholder in this fierce debate. However, as a Rhode Island taxpayer, a citizen of legal voting age, and a former member of the Wirt Public School System, it is my duty now to express my dire concern for the current state of affairs. Public education is a delicate ecosystem comprised of equal parts socialization, communal bonding, community outreach, and relevant functional, foundational education. Today, as I stand before you, it is my goal to enlighten you to the degree in which this ecosystem has been thrown out of balance and stress how critical it is to try and find the healthy and happy middle ground. Students, teachers, and the rest of the faculty and staff are suffering losses in every facet of their experience now due to overcrowding, underfunding, and unlivable teaching and learning environments. As there are many others here tonight who have grievances to air, I will not go in depth on these issues to save you the repetition, but will instead offer you the perspective of an undergraduate in higher education, only a few courses away from achieving her first degree in psychology and social work. As policymakers and enforcers, it is any administration's job to listen to all stakeholders before making a critical decision. And unfortunately, in the cases here tonight, they have failed to do this. Despite policymakers, teachers, staff, students, parents, and other community members rallying around the cause of stopping any more under-researched, underfunded, and poorly executed consolidations and infringement of student rights, both general ed and special ed and IEP students, our committee continues to push forward with highly controversial plans. Many, if not all of us, feel that our needs are not being met, especially special needs and IEP students, that we are not being listened to, and now that the desires of this community are being misrepresented. And in order to prescribe to the truest and most just form of our great democracy, a government for and by the people, it is the duty of those in charge to help return some of the power to us by effecting the changes we have so clearly expressed we need to see. It is not the duty of the administration to ignore their people and push forward with what they think is best, especially when it is in direct conflict with what the community is expressing and the law. It is our constitutional right to peacefully protest unfair legislation, ideals, and mismanagement of proceedings. So look around you tonight and tell me that this is not the most peaceful protest you have ever seen. A room full of educated and informed individuals who are respectfully expressing their concerns. I think I speak for the majority when I say it is not change that we as a whole are opposed to, rather the mishandling and mistreatment of our children, the inequity of educational opportunities, and the failure to even the playing field for those students in special education or with IEPs. In these critical years of education that can and often do determine their immediate futures in this country. We cannot undo the consolidation of Vets and Pilgrim, but we need this time to solve the problems that have arisen and turn this hot mess into the beautiful and functional ideal that it was envisioned to be before we can close more schools and take on other huge projects.
Excuse me, Caitlin, no closing schools, none of that.
So please,
okay?
Respected ladies and gentlemen, join with us, your community, in effecting the changes we want to see, in returning the power to us by allowing us time to orient ourselves in these changes and repair broken systems to assist not only parents, teachers, but our beloved students. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, good evening. I'm Courtney. I'm 16 years old. I'm going to share a story that I haven't really talked about, and I feel that is absolutely imperative to share with you tonight. My IEP began in fourth grade after practically failing out of the third grade. A new teacher had come to the school and wasn't exactly sure where I was going wrong or what exactly I was struggling with, and it was in the core subject math. My IEP continued for about 6 years after. They didn't want to originally put me on, but I got specially tested and had filed a 30-page document from a professional school psychologist, Dr. Randy Coleman, contradicting their decision. I had many advocates to help me along the way, such as my teachers and my parents, and along with some self-determination, I wound up off of it. The meeting I had last year, I was practically exceeding their standards, and I wasn't below exactly where I was supposed to be. They said that I would have to fail out of one of my core classes before I was able to get the help that I needed again. When I expressed this concern about not getting the help that I needed and having to possibly retake that class in my future years, they told me that I was able to get the help later on. And when I went down to receive the help, they denied me because I was in a higher IEP than all the other students. And I'm certainly just a milder case today after hearing many, many worse stories than mine. And I just wanted to say that no student should ever be denied the help that they need, especially, you know, special needs students and students like myself to help further their education and to get into college. But thank you so much for hearing me out. Thank you.
Courtney, you're one of the very reasons why we're all here in this room tonight. Thank you for sharing that story.
Hello, I am a special ed teacher at a junior high. I don't want to give too much information, paranoia. I'm also the first special ed teacher that has come up so far. I think that's probably because of fear. So I might be calling you if I get an email tomorrow. I'm here to tell the story of my program. I have been running a self-contained program for 6 years. I've been a special educator for 16, 15 of those in Warwick. My program was a huge success. It was, I guess you would call it, under the old co-op model. I had 11 students last year. I would range anywhere from 7 to 12 students in any given year. I had 4 core academic regular ed teachers with me full time. And we also would have a special literacy class. So I was with my students 5 periods a day. And that was 5 periods of specialized, individualized, explicit instruction. We had a lot of success stories over the years, gains in NECAP scores, social and emotional gains, happy students. They were part of a team. They did any team activities. They had the teachers that other kids did. They'd have Mr. Pierce, and they'd see their friends from the bus would have Mr. Pierce as well. And they were, I'm on the Stingrays team. We're all on the team together. There was no isolation. But for those academic classes that they needed that small group specialized instruction, they had it. They had my expertise. They had the regular ed teacher's expertise. In my professional opinion, the children that needed that program were in that program. There are self-contained programs at the elementary level. Mrs. Miller's class was one of them. Her children would come to my program. It was a continuum of services. The elementary program would feed to the junior high program. Depending on the need, they'd feed to individual programs at the high school level. I can't remember exactly when it was last year. I was informed by upper administration, Dr. Conley, that my program would no longer be in existence. They were getting rid of my program. Of course, that started the ball rolling for me, trying to do anything I could to save my program, because in my professional opinion, the 1% of the students that my program represented was the placement that they needed to be in. It was their least restrictive environment, and their legal document of an IEP required for them to be minimum 2.5 hours a day in this type of self-contained environment. I was never directly ordered to change how my IEPs were written, so I didn't. I wrote my IEPs in the way, in my professional opinion, with the team, with my regular ed partners, with parents. We would sit down and we would write the IEPs for the needs of the child. As the year was going on, I was fighting more and more. We need this program. My former principal believed we need the program. He had been scheduling it. He had been advocating. My assistant principal was advocating, to no avail. I kept inviting Dr. Conley in, come see my program, see the types of children I have, observe what I do. I finally got her to come in some point in the spring. I don't remember exactly when. She came in with Chris Cobb, one of her assistant directors, to my math class. I had three groups going on because even in my self-contained class, I still had varying abilities. And we always try to meet the children where they are and bring them up. So I had three separate groups going. I was fortunate enough last year to have two teaching assistants. So we had the three groups going. I was teaching algebra with manipulatives. I had two young men in the back doing a little bit more traditional math work. And then I had another group of students that were not ready for those algebra concepts yet. She came in and she sat down and she was in the room for my lessons. And we met afterwards to talk about it. And she told me that I could do what I do in a class with regular ed students, that I didn't need to have my program, that I could teach algebra with manipulatives in a class of 25, 26, 27. I, of course, did not agree with her. She shared documents from Providence about how they determine placement. I pointed out in the documents in Providence how they have programs like mine. They have the continuum of services, all the different levels that are required. You know, we kind of went back and forth. Finally, it got so far that I had a meeting with Dr. Conley and John Anderson, the special ed lawyer for the district. And I said, it is my professional opinion that these IEPs will be in violation next year if they do not have a program like mine. And again, this was before any type of movement or job fair or anything was done. At this point, I did not know if it would be my program. So I wasn't fighting for my job, so to speak. I was fighting for the program for the students. No matter who the teacher was, I firmly believed that this program needed to continue to exist. And John Anderson and Dr. Conley both said no. They didn't believe that my program needed to exist. And John Anderson went so far as to tell me he's never been sued over a box that has been checked. Because all of my students had the other placement checked for at least 2.5 hours a day. So I left that meeting very disheartened because naively I thought, oh, the lawyer's going to be on my side. And my program was not put into place for this school year. So there were many students in the new junior high whose IEPs were not being followed. Former students of mine, former elementary students, that their IEPs were in violation. So I actually started in the summer talking to my new principal, letting him know, we have these students out there. Their IEPs are going to be in violation. We need to do something about this. And he listened. He listened to me. He understood. He got it. I kept beating the drum. Somebody listened, finally. And about a month into school, my program was brought back for students that IEPs required it. There are still students that maybe should be in my program that aren't. My numbers are at 13 at the moment. I only have one teaching assistant. The district is paying an extra class to five separate teachers to make this program happen. Instead of putting it, if it had been originally scheduled, we would have been one section on a team. Because this was being done a month into school, under the incredible work of our guidance office, to make this happen, I got the program back, but I'm not on a team. So I have random teachers, wonderful teachers, but random teachers. I have a common planning time, but not with any of them. So I am not able to plan with my teachers. So much like other people have said, you know, the bell has rung. My students and my teaching assistant are off to the next class always beating me while I'm trying to talk with the science teacher or the math teacher or the English teacher about where are we going to go next. So we're on the fly. Luckily, I've been doing this for 6 years, so I have enough to pull from quickly. I'm not a new teacher. I don't think a new teacher would be able to do it this way. I've been told that moving forward, my program will continue to exist. My concern is for sixth grade. The numbers will be too high. I would not be able to do a sixth, seventh, and eighth grade class. I have seventh and eighth graders in my program currently. I know there are more students out there that require this in their IEP. I'm concerned about how many more students potentially over the next weeks could be placed in my program. There's no teaching assistants. I've been begging and pleading for help because I only have the one TA, and when the two periods that the students are not with me, they're all over the place. They're in classes that are not necessarily appropriate for them, but because we had to scramble last minute and do this, they're just put wherever there was room. And so my TA is, you know, running around the building trying to help them in the different classes when they're not with me. I find it extremely unfortunate because in my professional opinion, kept telling them that this needed to continue. Nobody would listen to me. But however, somebody in upper administration has to agree because they're approving for these teachers to get these extra classes. That's a significant amount of money. So somebody up top agrees that this was a clear violation and these things needed to be done because it's being rectified. My concern right now is what happened to my eighth graders from last year. To my knowledge, there is no program for the ninth graders. So I know there are more IEPs being violated. So that's my story, and I just wanted to share. And if I get an email tomorrow, I'll be giving you a call.
Question for you, if possible.
Sure.
Can you repeat and, if possible, elaborate on Mr. Anderson's comment?
Yes, I was trying to point out the different portions of the IEP that I believed that they would be violating under their goals in service time. The placement box was not, there's regular ed or other. For all my students, other is checked off. And then also it says under the rationale, you know, they need a small, specialized, highly individualized program to meet with success academically. And I was pointing out that I really believe these are the areas where these IEPs will be in violation. And he said to me, very arrogantly, I have never been sued over a box that's been checked. Now, it was only myself, him, and Dr. Conley in the room. So I'm sure that I will be called a liar if he's ever asked about this, and then they'll probably try to terminate me. But that's what happened. I wouldn't make something like that up.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Meredith, you bring to mind a similar conversation that I had with one of your other colleagues, and I was just looking for the documents that are in this pile somewhere, where I met with her several months ago. She drew up the training program. She designed it. It was approved by the superintendent of schools and the school committee. She worked that program for 2 years. I was in her classroom not that long ago to hear that they were changing the qualifications of the very program she designed that took her out of the classification for that program. So she lost it. Bizarre. Just bizarre.
Yeah. Well, and this is a case of them just completely eliminating a program and not even, it's not a matter that I wasn't certified to teach or they were changing it to severe profound and therefore I did not have the correct certificate to teach the program anymore or whatever. They just 100% unilaterally got rid of it. And I was only servicing 1%. If you took the combined populations of now the super junior high, I had, because I had students from both schools previously, it was 1% of the population. The 1% of the population was in the alternately assessed class, the severe profound students. 1% of the students were in my class. 98% of our special ed students were fully included, 100% of the time. So in my mind, that's amazing. And that's not a skew of numbers. I think it is absolutely appropriate that 1% of the students would require a program like mine. We're not talking about like 15% of the population being in a program like mine. That would be like, what's going on here? You know, and my program was very fluid. Just because you were in my program, you didn't have to stay. If students showed certain aptitudes and they were doing really well and they could try an inclusion setting, they would go and they would try an inclusion setting for a couple of weeks. And I had a really good track record over the 6 years of all the students I set out into inclusion. There was only one student that didn't do well. So I really tried to take that first quarter with the students to really get to see how they were doing and what their success rates were, because I didn't want to put a student in a situation that they couldn't handle. And that would be my professional opinion and judgment on the line doing that. So then when somebody questions my professional opinion and judgment on something, it just, you know, it kind of like the psychologists, why are you hiring people to do a job and then you're not letting them do their job? So, thank you.
Thank you.